You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Man, I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hello and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. As you can probably tell, our normal host, John Corrales, not here today. He's on a little bit of a vacation. I'm Jay King from The Athletic, here with Sam Jam Packard, the god, formerly of WEI.
Oh, please don't give me that formerly of WEI. I haven't been WEI years, kid.
That's why it's formerly, bro.
My credentials are that I've been on this Celtics Twitter game for 4 years, dog. I've been throwing out takes on the daily.
Jam Packard, throwing out takes on the daily. Anyway, we have a very off-season podcast for you today. Got some Marcus Smart on the jump comments to discuss. He went into the dysfunction of this past season, Kyrie as a teammate, a few other things that Marcus Smart discussed on the jump. We've got Romeo Langford, who still hasn't progressed to contact play, which doesn't seem great, being that is August now. Update from Tom Westerholm. We'll discuss the Romeo Langford stuff. And Jason Tatum has a new fragrance, which I'm sure smells delicious. Let's begin. Let's begin with Marcus Smart on the jump. I didn't think he said anything too crazy. It was a lot of kind of old news. He admitted Celtics were dysfunctional. We all knew the Celtics were dysfunctional. Of course they were dysfunctional. That's why they went from being the Eastern Conference favorite to winning fewer than 50 games and flaming out miraculously in the second round. What were like the kind of takeaways for you from that interview?
I think the most interesting part of what he said was just his framing of like what happened with regards to Kyrie. Like it wasn't, and him and Kyrie are clearly, I guess, close. I just remember Kyrie saying that he watches Marcus Smart defense highlights. So that's like an indication of their relationship. But he didn't throw Kyrie like under the bus. He basically said like, yeah, people didn't perform well in the playoffs, but we all were kind of bad and dysfunctional. And just kind of ownership of it. I feel like there's like, because Kyrie left and in the circumstances Kyrie left, I think a lot of it's just like, oh, Kyrie tanked the team and everything was bad because of Kyrie. And now it's like, everything's going to be great again. Well, you know, there's like a bunch of other professional basketball players. And I think it's just way too easy to blame Kyrie for everything. And so I thought that was just interesting of owning up as like, yeah, the whole team was dysfunctional. It wasn't just our delightfully insane point guard.
I think he's very right about that. We've talked several times on the podcast about Kyrie didn't deserve all the blame. Like, he definitely did not handle the season well. Clearly seemed to check out at some point in the playoff round. He was basically gone by February, December, whenever you want to believe he was gone. Like, happened well before the playoffs that he decided to leave. He said comments that were bad. There was just a stink around him for a large portion of the season, but that was everybody.
Wait a second. Not all the season. Remember that West Coast plane ride? Man, they had a good time. Kyrie was singing karaoke. The season was saved. Things was good again. It wasn't like there was pockets of hope during the season.
That's true. There were pockets of hope. I do think, too, Marcus Smart had a different type of relationship with Kyrie Irving than several of his teammates did. I think when Marcus Smart's mother passed away, Kyrie reaching out and kind of being there for Marcus helped them bond in a way that maybe Kyrie didn't with everybody. I also think Kyrie had a different level of respect for Marcus Smart than he had for a lot of the other players. So the hostility that was created by Kyrie calling out several guys by name or just by lumping them into the young guys didn't exist with Marcus Smart, because Marcus Smart was never one of those guys. From the start, Kyrie was Marcus Smart's biggest advocate. He wanted him in the starting lineup. He praised him for taking pressure off him offensively and defensively. He kind of went out of his way to, and I think in some ways he was belittling Brad Stevens. Like when Jalen, I remember, I think it was in November, Jalen missed a game against the Pelicans. He was hurt and Marcus Smart started. And I think it was Marcus Smart's first start. And Kyrie just raved and raved and raved about the new starting lineup. And it was clear he'd wanted Marcus Smart to start for a while. And so I do think Marcus probably has a little different view of Kyrie than maybe some other guys do for a number of different reasons.
Yeah, it clearly is. Kyrie, it feels like the more came out, was not a big Jalen fan. And I don't know what his thoughts were with Terry, but you hear the Jackie Mack reporting, it's like he was disillusioned because Brad wouldn't make changes to the starting lineup or was giving people minutes, a.k.a. Jalen. And then Danny Ainge wouldn't trade people, a.k.a. Jalen. I think Jalen and Kyrie, they're both self-proclaimed intellectuals. And so I think only one of them actually is. And they clearly had some conflict from the jump.
Yes. Yes. I think they did. I think that was clear when Jalen made those comments. I think it was after the Brooklyn game, where it starts at the top, not at the bottom, starts at the top with Kyrie, guys. And yeah, so it was a weird year, I think, for everybody. Marcus Smart, let's move on to his comments about Kemba Walker. Marcus Smart did a Q&A on Twitter to raise money for his foundation, which was pretty cool. I'm not sure I've ever seen that before.
It was a great strategy.
Yeah, he was bribing people to make donations.
Oh, well, he would answer the question and then provide the link. And it's like, oh, man, this guy went out of his way to answer. I have to donate. And so just great stuff. We'll talk about this after we talk about Kemba. But Marcus Smart has been extremely online recently, and I'm here for it. But first, what did he say about Kemba?
During that Q&A, he said the toughest player in the NBA to guard, for him at least, is Kemba Walker. Okay. Are you buying or selling that? Was that just him saying that because Kemba's now his teammate? Or is that him actually being honest?
I'm not going to accept the forced binary you're throwing at me here. I'm going to say it's a little of both. I think it's absolutely like Kemba's his new teammate, so that's something he's going to say. But Kemba also cooked the Celtics, like, and repeatedly for the past two seasons. And I think Marcus Smart, one of his strengths on defense is obviously his size and physicality. And for a quicker, smaller guy, I think that has less of an impact. So I think there's like some truth to the argument that, you know, someone who's as quick and small like Kemba, who can kind of, he kind of negates a lot of the stuff that Marcus Smart does on defense. But then I also think that Kemba Walker just signed and is Marcus Smart's new teammate. So I'm going to go a little bit of both.
Yeah, I feel like if you would ask Marcus Smart this question a year ago, he probably would have said Kyrie.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I also do think that Kemba has roasted the Celtics and tortured Marcus Smart in particular. With several,
they should have doubled him. Every other team in the league doubled him.
Classic throwback to Kyrie's subtweet of Brad Stevens after the Hornets came back from a 20-ish point deficit against the Celtics this past season. But those are the type of players who give Marcus Smart the most troubles. Obviously, he's a defender who can guard 1 through 4 at least, and many fives. He's just a lunatic. But I think like the shifty guards are the ones who give him the most problems. And I'm not sure there's anybody shiftier than Kemba. Like, he can really shift you. He can cross you over. He can leave you in the dust. He can embarrass you. And now he's on Marcus Smart's team. So Marcus Smart is hyping him up.
When we get back from the break, he also would have said Isaiah Thomas was the hardest person to guard in the league like 3 years ago.
That's true. Marcus Smart, loyal dude, as you can tell probably by his sticking by Kyrie's side through it all. When we get back from the break, update on Romeo Langford, the sort of forgotten lottery pick. And we're back to talk about Romeo Langford's injury. He's basically back, still not doing full contact stuff, according to Tom Westholm of MassLive.com, who caught up with Romeo at the Basketball Hall of Fame, where he was signing autographs and ish for some fans. So, Sam, Jam, do you think this injury will hold back Romeo Langford when it comes to his rookie season?
I mean, it's not good. I thought I read the headline that it's like his thumb is progressing, but if they're completely revamping his shot, that's certainly the thumb is going to be an indication. Yeah, I mean, if he's not healed by August and he's trying to kind of create a new shot during that time, he could have some early season struggles. It's not a good sign, but I'm not a hand doctor. So I don't know. Like, Brad Stevens doesn't really seem to, like, I don't know what the Celtics' approach to player development will be and, like, just letting him kind of struggle with a hand. They're going to send him to the G League. Like, they're not, if he's not going to be effective out there, are they really going to give him that much playing time?
Ooh, already thinking the lottery pick's going to the G League.
I mean, I was trying to send Gordon Hayward to the G League last year, so I'm a big proponent of the G League.
You are a G League guy, big G League guy. Yeah, I think it's certainly reached deep enough into the summer. Like, it's August now, and Romeo Langford still hasn't done any contact drills. He missed all of summer league. Training camp is a month away, and he hasn't been able to play 5-on-5 yet for months and months since basically the college season. So that doesn't help. And other guys they learned in summer league and they had opportunities to get some reps with sort of some of the new system, trying to figure out new roles, new responsibilities. In Romeo's case, like you said, he's totally revamping his entire shot, which is not a tough thing to begin with when you're also dealing with a thumb injury that has taken a long time to recover. Like, shit ain't good. Shit ain't great. Shit ain't perfect. But yeah, I don't know. I think back to Avery Bradley, who I believe missed preseason and training camp and maybe summer league before his rookie season, and it caught up to him, and he referenced it several times later on, like that it was tough for him coming in and learning everything on the fly and all that. So, and he had a tough rookie year. And it wasn't until year two where he sort of broke out and started to develop a rhythm, broke into things. Romeo Langford is coming into a totally different situation. This isn't a championship team he's joining. It's a team with a bench that has a lot of opportunity on it after the departures of Terry Rozier and Marcus Morris. Like, Celtics bench doesn't have a lot of established dudes. It just doesn't. It's like Daniel Tice has played some. Shimmy Ogilvy has played a little bit.
But they need someone who can, like, score off the bench. And it's why, like, summer league, Carson Edwards is getting all the hype because he can was a bucket in summer league. But Romeo Langford should be the more kind of talented guy. And I think either of them has the opportunity to kind of be the backup shooting guard or a guy who's just trying to go out there and score on the second unit. And you would think that it's like Langford would be the one in the kind of the best position to kind of earn those minutes. But you can't earn minutes if you're not on the floor. That's an old lesson someone taught me once.
Wow. That's a heck of a lesson. Truly a great lesson. All right, let's talk about where Romeo may fit. Now that we're here, I do think there are minutes available. Terry Rozier departure, that leaves 20-something minutes, 23 minutes-ish. Marcus Morris going, like, the Celtics bench, I assume Grant Williams or Semi Ojeleye will play backup 4 minutes. I assume Poirier, Tice, or Robert Williams will emerge as a backup center with Enes Kanter starting. I assume that one of the perimeter guys, whether it's Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward, probably one of those three will come off the bench. I assume there are minutes open for a scorer. And is that Romeo Langford? Is it Carson Edwards? Is Romeo Langford ready to step in and defend? Because obviously he's a longer and bigger and bouncier option next to Carson Edwards, but Edwards has a ratchet. Edwards can really shoot that thing. And I think there's a case to be made that the Celtics could use some instant offense off the bench. I think there's also a case to be made that some of their best bench lineups when Kemba Walker's out will have like just interchangeable pieces everywhere. Like let's say Tice is at the center and Ojeleye or Williams is at the four and Marcus Smart is point guard and Jaylen Brown is three and Romeo Langford is two. Like, could you switch one through five?
Ooh.
Could you switch at least four positions? I think those lineups are like pretty interesting. And the Celtics played them a little bit last year when Terry Rozier was out or Kyrie was out, but they didn't play them much because they were playing two short point guards. If you don't have to play two short point guards, you open yourself up to options like that. So if Romeo can play like that, those are some pretty cool lineups, pretty interesting lineups that they could throw out there. I don't know. These are things I think about in this summer.
He has to prove it on the defensive end. Like he's not going to need like that thumb to play defense and to be in the right position and kind of learn the coverage. And you're right. Like I think Carson Edwards, his shooting ability helps, but Carson Edwards is also 5'11". And it's really, you can't really play Carson Edwards and Kemba Walker together. And so if there's some sort of guard rotation where, and Brad likes to mix it up a lot, you think there's definitely a place for Langford with his length. It's just the shooting is, you can't, I don't know, it's really tough to be a guard in this league and get sustained minutes unless you're Tony Allen level defense if you can't shoot. And so if he's got this thumb issue that's really making him like, if he can't even like knock down some catch and shoot threes, because a lot of his offensive game in college was kind of attacking the rim, slashing, which I think the Celtics will definitely take. They definitely need help getting to the free throw line. But when he's playing with better players and players like Kemba or Tatum or Jaylen Brown, people who we think of more as playmakers, I think at this stage he's going to need to be like a catch and shoot guy who can just space the floor. And so if his shooting's not there, it's going to be tough. Maybe you go a little offense defense with Carson Edwards and Romeo Langford, depending on the matchup. But I think he'll earn his time on the playing on the court with his defense. And I think that's been Brad's kind of MO with rookies is they can have all the talent in the world, but if they make mistakes on defense, they are more likely to get taken out. And so I think if Langford really wants to play, it's got to be a commitment on the defensive end.
I love summer podcasts, man. Like we are literally debating how much playing time someone who missed summer league and has never done anything at the professional basketball level will play. We have literally no clue, but we're out here spitting. We're out here just giving our opinions. Hot takes, hot, totally uninformed takes.
It's better than the debate over the 15th man, because at least Romeo Langford will step on the court. 15th man discussion is the most nonsensical.
There are a lot of nonsensical discussions. Let's have some more of them.
we got plenty of nonsense coming.
Tatum's cologne, and then a few people hit us up on Twitter wanting to discuss things. So we'll bring those up too. And we're back. Jason Tatum has a cologne. I think it's, what is it called? Be Fierce?
Be Fierce. Yeah.
Be Fierce. Which should really be his motto.
I guess so.
Do you think he's subtweeting himself with his cologne name?
I don't know. I just liked all the he got thoroughly roasted on Instagram by Jaylen Brown and Shane Larkin as soon as he posted that photo. The question is, it's like, will I be dumb enough to buy a bottle of Be Fierce? I'm not a cologne guy. Never really been a cologne guy. But I am an irrational fan. So it's like, where do I draw the line between irrational fanhood? Like, do I want to? And also, how do they design what the smell is? Is it supposed to smell like Jason Tatum? Does Jason Tatum going to be wearing beef ears? So many questions and not enough answers, in my opinion.
I think we definitely now need a Jason Tatum cologne review. Be fierce from Jam Packer.
Oh, I can absolutely do that. It's just I don't know. It's just like buying cologne feels like a I don't want to say a sleazy move, but who are you, like just cologne feels weird to me. It's not a thing that I normally dabble in. But if you're gonna put Jason Tatum on the bottle, if this is just the essence of Jason Tatum, I'm gonna have to do it. Yeah. Maybe catch me at a Celtics game smelling like Be Fierce.
Be Fierce. Well, I mean, is that name just begging him to draw more free throws and get to the line?
I would hope so. I mean, it's one off season. You train with Kobe, one off season. You get your own cologne. It's the natural progression of the NBA superstar.
What, the initial name was Mamba Mentality, and Brad Stevens was like, no, it
can't
Beef
do
Fierce.
It. Do you think Brad Stevens will wear any of the cologne?
No, I do not. I don't take Brad for much of a cologne guy. I think he sort of takes the Jam Packer.
I don't know. You've been pretty close to him in scrums. How does Brad Stevens smell, Jay King? You tell me.
I've never noticed his smell. Which probably for the best. He gets sometimes after like a little losing skid, he'll get a little stubble and not shave for a couple of days. Come to practice with like a little 5 o'clock shadow, but that's kind of the weirdest thing I've noticed about Brad Stevens, I guess. But we got some weird questions too. We got some weird questions from the people who want to ask us some strange things.
First, before we go to the weird questions, I just want to talk about Marcus Smart and him bringing Weird Celtics Twitter like to the mainstream. He was asked a question about Weird Celtics Twitter on The Jump, and he talked
Packer.
About how...
God yeah. damn it, Packer. Will you let me host?
No.
This is one of the tweets.
Oh, one of the
from
tweets.
From Jeff Barkham's... At Celtics blog fame, talk about the macroeconomic and social impact of the cult of personality that is Marcus Smart.
Well, Vickers on page 98 said that the Southern modalities.
That's exactly what I thought about, too.
Okay, I watched that the other day. Think about how much, like, that guy, like, what's his name? Barney, the guy who dropped that. He was just quoting, some academic thing in the club, like not in the club, in the bar, and Will Hunting like called him out on it. But why was he like, why was it such a hostile thing? Shouldn't they be like best friends because they both have like very in-depth knowledge of pre-colonial historical theories? No, couldn't the guy have just been like, hey, yeah, I was quoting that. I read that recently.
Like, here's the thing you don't get about that. And which is that, right, what they say, his friends are gorillas. Will Hunting's friends are gorillas, but those gorillas would take a baseball bat to your head if they needed to. And so once this dude tried to one up Will's buddy, they were never gonna be friends. Plus, he just jacked the quote from Vickers' work in Essex County, page 98, and just tried to pawn it off as his own. Wood drastically underestimates the impact of social distinctions predicated upon wealth, especially inherited wealth. That wasn't his quote. That wasn't original. At least,
you know what's
at least
BS?
Will Hunting will be original.
You know what's BS? Is that's not even a real quote. Because I looked up Vickers' work in Essex County, page 98. There's nothing talking about Gordon Wood or anything that has to do with it. It was a farce. It's like, almost like it was made up for a movie.
At least it wouldn't be unoriginal.
All right, but back to the original point. Marcus Smart, Weird Celtics Twitter, he was asked about it. It was just really cool to see it on The Jump, which is like national ESPN television, and then like to see all the different memes they scrolled through. You had some classic Riffs Man on there. You had some Frazier Ramon. You had some Efren Ramos. Some of the greats saw their art on national television, and I just like that Marcus Smart described it as, you know, sometimes you see the darndest things on there. It was just like the most earnest interpretation of Weird Celtics Twitter. And then he was talking about in his Q&A we talked about earlier, he was talking about he was asked all sorts of ridiculous questions, like what is government and what his favorite French era weapon was, and he said the guillotine, which is hilarious. And then he retweeted something talking about taking down the ruling class, and like a very socialist magazine started like retweeting and became basically adopted Marcus Smart as their working class hero. It was just a fun time to be online, a very summer edition, but being extremely online and Marcus Smart is a great combination.
Yes, it is. Moving on a little bit, we've got Sam Sheehan, who wants us to talk about Dragon Rappa or whatever the hell that damn video game he always
This
talks
is a
about
weird it. Video game that he likes. It's set in a Japanese school. There's some, like, I've
this
played
is already
it. I downloaded
too
the
much
game.
Dragon Rappa talk. No.
I downloaded the game. I played it. It's just, I didn't like it that much, and it just feels
it
weird
sucks.
Now.
It
you don't
sucks.
Even know. You didn't even try.
Yeah, I will not try either, because all Sam Sheehan does, for those who don't know, Sam Sheehan is a solid Celtics follow. Very funny man. But
hilarious.
Dragon Rappa.
I always call it Drongan Paw Pawn.
Whatever the hell it is. I ain't playing it. Let's move on.
I've never taken you for a video games guy, a non-sports video games guy.
For some reason, someone wants to know my thoughts on LeBron's AAU celebration.
Oh my God.
Morosi? My thoughts are that this was the single stupidest debate that our society has ever undergone. First of all, is it okay to get annoyed by a grown man hopping in layup lines with his son just to dunk? Yes, it is okay to get annoyed by that. Is it okay to get annoyed by the same grown man running on the court in celebration and chest bumping dudes and overall acting a fool? Yes, it's okay to get annoyed by that. Is it okay to respect him for being a father and always being there for his kid and clearly putting in all the time to go to all these AAU tournaments, even though he's probably one of the busiest, most desired people in the world? Yes, it is very good to acknowledge that he is always there for his children, and he seems like a very, very good figure as a father. Do these two sides have to clash like they did? No, they don't. Just let people be annoyed by LeBron being over the top and let people respect LeBron for being there as a father. We can live in harmony as both sides of this argument. Those are my thoughts.
Yes, I was just talking about the virtues of being extremely online, but one of the drawbacks is like people love to argue and have really strong opinions about things, and it's just like you don't have to like have an opinion, or if you do, there's just like, I don't know, like, just why fight about it? It seems so unnecessary. It's just like, okay, let's just move on from this. I had zero opinion for about LeBron being on the court.
I will say Jason Tatum is kind of the one who turned this conversation mainstream.
Oh, well, absolutely. He took the KFC Barstool guy and, like, I don't know, verified blue checkmark Twitter is a different world. You have the potential to see a whole different things. I don't even know how it operates. But, yeah, it was weird that it was Jason Tatum who kind of might have been the spark.
Yeah, because normally he's very bland. He's not too fierce. But he came in fierce on this one. He respects LeBron as a father. And you know what? Like, LeBron is there as a father, and LeBron can be over the top, and that both things can be true. We don't have to all be so passionate about taking one side of things when there are gray areas to shit.
Hear, hear. Har, har.
What else we got? Will TD Garden have tacos available on Tuesdays if they have a home game? It is a must. That's from B-Cakes Weehigh. B-Cakes Weehigh. Nice. we don't even know if Taco Fall is going to make the team, guys. Like, he'll be in training camp. He has a chance. Let's maybe do it for Jason Tatum. Have those tacos for Jason Tatum.
The Taco J, they had the opportunity last year. They didn't really take the opportunity to do it. I don't know. I don't think that the stadium is the best place to have taco. Like, that's just not a taco environment. I wouldn't want a stadium taco. I get, like, the novelty of it all, but that's not going to be a high-quality taco.
Why not?
I don't know. You need fresh ingredients. I mean, I personally
need high-quality tacos. Taco Bell tacos are trash, but they're so damn tasty.
I mean, if they put a Taco Bell in, then you can, like, understand the expectations while going in. I think that's the only acceptable taco. But if they just did, like, generic behind section 14 tacos, I don't know. It's not going to be as good.
I now need Taco Bell in TD Garden.
That's gross.
All right. A little basketball talk. OG Josh wants to know, what does a Celtics team with an all-star Jason Tatum look like?
It looks like a very good team with an all-star Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think he has a potential. I think he has a high potential to make the all-star team. I think he could score 20 points a game, which in the East, I think has a chance of making an all-star team. But I don't think it's like if Jason Tatum is voted at the all-star game this year, magically this team's going to win like 54 games. I think the Jason Tatum could be an all-star and they could win 46 games, or Jason Tatum could be not an all-star and they could also win 46 games. I don't know. I don't think it's like varies that much based on his individual performance. Clearly they'll do better the better he plays, but I don't think it makes them ever makes them a legitimate contender.
But I do think him, if he does emerge as an all-star this year, it bodes more well for his long-term future, which is one of the most important factors for the Celtics over the next 5 or 10 years. Like, if Jason Tatum becomes a perennial all-star, that's a franchise-changing development. And I think he could. I think if he does it in year three, then, yeah, it won't be much different than if he averages, like, 17 points and 6 rebounds and misses the all-star game. But if he takes that step forward and gets more free throws and takes more threes and becomes closer to the dream of Jason Tatum that people kind of entered last season with, then I think that's a big deal for the Celtics franchise long term, although it may not make like the biggest difference this coming season.
I think it depends on how fierce he is, and all he has to do is be fierce and I think he'll unlock his true potential.
This is true. He will smell delicious. Abe Hanoush wants to talk about peanut butter and jelly sponsorships.
I've not heard anything from Welch's. Open to any peanut butter and jelly sponsorship. Get at me if you own a peanut butter and jelly company.
Jack Michael wants us to talk about Ryan Johnson.
Okay, that guy.
I don't know who Ryan Johnson is.
He directed one of the Star Wars films.
Okay, we're moving on.
All right.
That's it.
I got one more question for you.
Ryan freaking Johnson on this podcast.
This isn't a
Star Wars podcast.
No, it won't be. We're not Star Wars guys. John is probably a Star Wars guy. I've watched the films. I doubt you have, but not passionate about them.
No, this is not a Star Wars podcast.
I got a good one for you. When the Reds traded Tanner Roark, he was eating a beef and cheddar and curly fries in the parking lot of an Arby's. Now, they asked about the Celtics, but I'm gonna turn this around on you, Jay King. What fast food restaurant would you be more likely to find yourself eating when you receive career-altering news?
So most likely it would be McDonald's.
Because, you're so basic, dog.
But I'm saying, like, if you're on the highway, you stop at McDonald's. Like, that's just what's there. In a perfect world, I'd receive career-altering news while eating Taco Bell, while crushing Taco Bell to the dome, crushing a 12-box of soft tacos supreme with no lettuce.
So you're
how.
ideally is that you'll be eating Taco Bell, you'll receive career-altering news, and then you'll just have diarrhea.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what type of career-altering news we're talking about, but either way, I think Taco Bell is either a great way to celebrate it or a great way to just be like, oh, my life just took a drastic turn for the worse.
Let me drown myself in Taco Bell.
Let's crush these tacos. So, a lot of taco talk, but not Taco Fall talk.
Shockingly, just a lot of taco talk without mentioning Taco Fall. Well, you would most likely find me at Popeyes. I can't pass the Popeyes in Kenmore Square without going to Popeyes. Popeyes chicken is fucking awesome. I love Popeyes.
All right. We've got... Oh, I like this question by Derek Silva, but we might have to save it for another time. We're running a little long right now. Derek Silva wants to know, who are you most fired up about the Celtics having not drafted the last few years? Who's your thank God that didn't happen guy or starting five? That is a great question. We're going to use that for the next podcast. It's so damn good. We're going to end this podcast instead with @BossAlien, who wants to know, do we believe in aliens? And have any of us been abducted? So we'll start with you, Jen.
I've not been abducted, but I fully believe in aliens. There's an entire article up in the New York Times about like the Navy and monitoring these UFOs that were changing directions in a manner that it just didn't make sense with regards to like physics and our current understanding of thrust and propulsion. And this is like certified reports in the New York Times. There are clearly things out there that are flying up and down the Eastern Seaboard, doing wild stuff, and we know about it. We just don't know like what anything beyond that. But 100% fact, there is something out there.
Those reports are actually just about Robert Williams's off-season workouts.
What? That he just loves jumping? Tell me.
That was just a bad Robert Williams joke.
Yeah, it didn't really hit because I haven't heard anything about Robert season off season. Oh, Time Lord, Time Space. I get it now. I'm sorry, I was behind. I didn't give you the laugh you needed.
Well above your head, just beyond the level you're thinkable.
I think I was
capable of thinking.
No, I was like super ready to like dive into the discussion about the existence of aliens, and you just weren't for it, so you tried to dial it back in, and I just didn't recognize the social cues.
Here's the thing,
that's on me.
You got way too technical with the discussion of aliens. You went
well because I'm using hard facts
New York
and
Times
data bro.
Articles and like actual alien sightings. My thing is this: if you don't believe that in this vast universe of God knows how many solar systems and God knows how many planets and all this shit out there that we don't even know about, and you are so egotistical to think that humans are the only freaking beings capable of thinking and doing all this crap and building a society the way we've done it? Are you that egotistical? That freaking dumb? Of course there are other beings out there, probably a lot smarter than our dumbasses, who are just out there chilling, living life, lamping.
Lamping, chilling, of course. Yeah, no, it's obvious. I'm glad we're on the same page. You went the appeal to... personal feelings, and I went to appeal to logic and facts, but I think we landed on the same thing. Obviously, there's aliens. If you believe otherwise, you're an idiot.
No doubt. That seems like a good place to end this podcast. We are the greatest Celtics podcast that has ever been recorded, created, mastered, and that's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On podcast.